Way back when I was thinking about starting a high-ticket dropshipping business, the one thing I was looking for was someone to show me what one of these sites looks like. So John and I have done that for you at dropshipbreakthrough.com/go. So head to dropshipbreakthrough.com/go and watch the free training.
Welcome to the Dropship Podcast, where you'll learn how to build and grow a high-ticket dropshipping business and hear stories from successful e-commerce entrepreneurs. Let's kick this thing off.
Hey, welcome to the Dropship Podcast. John here with you for a solo episode. And today I am sharing a recording of a dropshipping Ask Me Anything that I did very recently. So we do these in one of our Facebook groups, and we also stream these live to our YouTube channel. And in both of those places, you can interact with these Dropship Breakthrough Ask Me Anythings and other live trainings that we do. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, I'd like to get in on that action, I'd like to be able to ask John and sometimes John and Ben some questions, I'd just like to join in for the fun and the discussion that goes on. We get a lot of interaction on these sort of sessions. You can head to a couple of links below this episode. If you're on Spotify or Apple or a podcast listener, you'll find the links in the description just below the episode to either the Facebook group or the YouTube channel. So if you go join the Facebook group, you're going to get notified when we go live and do these sort of things. If you're a subscriber to our YouTube channel, then you will also get notified when we go live with these sort of things. And as I say, you can join in get some direct interaction with myself and or Ben. So go ahead and do that. The links are below. But let's from here jump into it. We cover a whole range of topics in this one, from ads to suppliers to niches, a whole bunch of stuff. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Q&A. So first question is from J.M. Chapman, who asked, I would love just a better understanding of what happens when someone places an order on your site. Do you just simply email your supplier with the order with payment info? My only dropshipping experience has been with a full service that handles everything for me. So I guess, thanks for the question, JM. Pretty easy one to answer. High ticket dropshipping, I guess it probably is a little bit different to what the experience might be if you had experience, say, previously with low ticket dropshipping, where you might have been using a service like Obolo or something like that. You're connecting up with something like AliExpress or something along those lines, where those sort of services kind of automate the process of placing an order and all of that sort of thing to a large extent. So that's not really the case with high ticket dropshipping. There are none of those type of services that we use for high ticket dropshipping because we have a direct relationship with the supplier and we're working with multiple suppliers. Now, every supplier almost uses a different system of stock management, of taking orders, et cetera, et cetera. So there's no way to really connect to all of them in an automated sense at this point in time. So what that means is that it is a fairly manual process in most cases, which is not really a bad thing because when you're doing high ticket dropshipping, you're not dealing with any number of the volume of individual orders as you might do with low ticket dropshipping. So is it a particularly onerous task? No. At some point, you're going to have employees who are working for you and they're going to manage this process for you completely. So quite simply, most of the time what happens is when you receive an order, you're going to send an email, and the sending of that email can be somewhat automated, including the content that goes into the email using tools like Zapier and other things. But you're going to send an email into the supplier saying, hey, we'd like to place an order for this product. We'd like to ship it to this location if the supplier is handling the shipping for you. Yes, this is your question, JM. I don't know your first name, so I'll just keep calling you JM. In some cases, you may arrange the shipping for the supplier, in which case you'll just send them the shipping information, which you would have booked through a shipping provider. And they're then going to send you, either they'll send you an invoice for you to make payment on, or some suppliers may keep a card on file you know, if you've got a credit card, a company credit card, or a debit card, they may keep that on file and just charge you, you know, when they're ready to invoice you. So it could be either one of those two things. There are a lot of suppliers these days that do have a like an online portal, like basically an e-commerce type functionality of their own for their wholesalers to use to place orders. So there are some suppliers you'll have where you actually go onto a website to place the order. You place your payment details into that in the same way that you would on an e-commerce website, and the order is processed that way. So that can be the case with some suppliers that you have. You know, I personally have quite a few of those suppliers myself where that's how orders are placed. And so it can be a combination. There probably are a couple of other methods that people might do, I suppose. But between those two, that's going to account for at least, you know, 90% of high ticket dropshipping suppliers. You know, once product ships, you know, you'll have some process in place for the supplier to let you know that. Sometimes they'll send you the tracking information, all that sort of thing, which you then place in the fulfillment details for the customer. So the process on the Shopify side for you is like you receive the order, I would recommend you make sure that the product is in stock that the customer's ordered. Now, you may know this, you may have stock tracking from your supplier, you may not, you may have to call them and just double check sometimes. Capture the payment from the customer in Shopify, place the order with the supplier. Once the supplier informs you that the product is shipped, you then, in whatever the mechanism for that is, you then fulfill the order in Shopify, placing the tracking details and everything in there. And that's the end of the process. Done. Happy days. Thanks for the question. All right, moving along. Next one down the list was from Nicole Piazzoli. And she's unsurprisingly living in Italy. Nicole, you have a very Italian last name. But Nicole lives in Italy and she wants to do dropshipping in the high ticket dropshipping in the USA. Can I do it if I'm not a resident of the USA? This is an interesting question, and it's got a bit more interesting in recent times from a couple of perspectives. So it seems, and I'm going to say very early days on this, but I've heard from a couple of people who are in another country and trying to grow start or launch or grow a business in the US, a high-ticket dropshipping business in the US. That there's been some new requirements put out by both payment platforms as well as Google for verification that they're asking for things like a local address, you know, SSNs, social security numbers, et cetera, to get your accounts verified and usable. So being able to do things like Google shopping ads and that sort of thing. These are very new things. So if you had have asked me this question about a month ago, I would have said, yeah, you can do it, no problems. You know, you've got to do a couple of extra things in terms of setting up a company in the US that somebody who lives in the US doesn't have to do, but it's fairly straightforward. You can definitely do that. And plenty of people have done that. But as I say, in the last month or so, I've heard of a couple of people who are having trouble, not so much with setting up the business. So yes, you can do business in the USA if you don't live there. Right. I mean, at the basic level, yes, you can. There is no problem with that whatsoever. However, there are some platforms that we do use. Not every method of growing a business, I'm not saying, but there are some platforms that sound like they're starting to make it a bit harder for you to do that. There are many ways that you can grow a business which does not rely on all of these things, but I would just raise a flag there. Yes, you can do it, but there are some parts of it that look like they've become a bit more difficult in very recent times. And I would say we haven't learned everything we need to learn about those new rules that look like they're being put in place by some platforms. And so we're still kind of learning about that. So I can't really say too much more about that because I'm just waiting to hear back from some people that I've been talking to about these issues that are dealing with them at the moment. And so, you know, there might be a further update on some of those things from us in the not too distant future. But at the basic level, yeah, absolutely, you can do it. Obviously, there's a time zone difference that you have to be aware of. You know, you're going to be dealing with customers in the USA, you know, US business hours. You're going to be needing to talk to suppliers, once again, on US business hours. And so as long as you're comfortable dealing with any time zone differences that exist for you, you can definitely do it. So thank you for that question, Nicole. And just a reminder, if you're watching in live, feel free to, you got questions, you want me to talk about something, answer any questions, please post them as a comment and I will get to them. All right, moving down the list here. Next question is from Benjamin. Hello, Benjamin, if you're watching along or if you see this later. Benjamin's question relates to Google Shopping, and he's asking, how do you fix a Google Shopping ads funnel campaign when it goes into the dreaded limited by budget status? This happened to me, and even though I raised my budget to the Google recommended level, I've noticed that basically all my traffic has gone into the medium priority campaign. I've paused this campaign in order to push the searches to my high value campaign, which is kind of working, but ideally I would like the funnel to work again as it was before. Thanks. So for anybody who's watching or listening in at any point who is not in a member of the Dropship Breakthrough program, our course, we do Google Shopping in a very specific way, which is very specific to Google Shopping. If you've been getting tons of value from the podcast and you want to learn more about high-ticket dropshipping and interact with a fantastic community of high-ticket dropshippers, we've got a free Facebook group that you can join right now today. So if you head over to Facebook and search for Dropship Breakthrough, you'll see a Facebook come up that has on the end of it, High-Ticket Dropshipping Mastery for New Entrepreneurs. Hit the join button, you'll get into the group. We do group-only trainings in there, and there's thousands of other people who are going through the high-ticket dropshipping journey that you can look for support from, ask questions, and find out if high-ticket dropshipping is for you. Very specific to high-ticket dropshipping using Google Shopping, which is not necessarily the way that a lot of other people outside of high-ticket dropshipping utilize it. But it works particularly well when you're selling high ticket products. Now, it does have some, like everything, some kind of little weird things about it. One of those is that if you get into your campaigns are limited by budget, which means that you've set a campaign of, say, $30 a day budget limit and Google wants to spend more than that, you get this budget status, limited by budget. And it can cause the particular setup that we use not to work correctly. And so how to fix it? Well, there's usually a few reasons why this happens. This commonly happens to people when they don't have the funnel set up correctly in the first place, or they've got a leak in it. And so I would say, Benjamin, that probably you got into limited by budget status because you had a leak in the funnel. And that would be indicated by you raising your budget to the recommended level and all of your traffic still going into the medium priority campaign. That would indicate that you have a hole in your funnel. And so you need to find that hole and fix it properly, because it just won't work. It'll never work properly otherwise. Usually that's going to be something like, you've got just some negative keywords in the wrong place, or you've got match types used incorrectly or something. But it looks like something's leaking into your medium priority campaign that shouldn't be. It's a little bit hard to diagnose exactly from talking about it here without actually looking at the account. But the basic way that you would fix this is, like, you need to work out why it's going into limited by budget. Now, to clear a limited by budget status, you have to increase your budget to whatever the recommended level is. If you don't have any holes in your funnel, then it's not going to spend the same amount, right? And so it shouldn't just automatically go up to that new level. So you go to the recommended budget and wait for the limited by budget status to clear, and then you can drop your budget back down again. Right. But like I say, if you've got a leak in your funnels, then that's not going to fix it. Now, once again, you just need to go and find the leak. So look, that's a bit of a technical answer and question. It probably doesn't make sense to everybody, but you'll just have to dig around and find what was causing that. Otherwise, you can clear the limited buy budget. If you don't have a leak, is to decrease your bids so that you're not pushing so hard on your budget, or be more restrictive with negative keywords and what search terms are spending money within your campaigns. All right, moving along here. Next question down is from Afsar. Afsar, thank you for the question, asks, I haven't even built my store yet, got my first approval with a big distributor, which is very surprising. That's cool. Nice one. Should I still upload demo products or start adding the original products straight away? There are other range of products in my market, so I don't know what should be the right approach. Thank you. If that were the case and I had got access at that point to some actual products, I would just start uploading those. The point of demo products is just to put a few products on your site so that people who look at your site can actually see product pages. It's not really to have a representation of every product category that you might possibly sell on your site. Like, you're not putting up tons of demo products. So if you do have access to actual products that you could actually sell, then yeah, just start uploading those and continue to call suppliers once. You only need like a few demo products on your site. You don't need anything else. So yep, just start uploading those products straight away. Thank you for the question, Afsar. Good question. All right, moving along to Rodrigo. Rodrigo asks, what SEO approach would you recommend in the beginning? Technical/on-page, then off-page. Okay, well, I would say within some of those, there's a range of things. But this is what I would do, and this is what we teach in our course. In the Dropship Breakthrough program, you can see this little link going on the screen, dropshipbreakthrough.com/300. You can still go there and get a really good deal if you're thinking of joining. We have easily the most comprehensive SEO stuff. In fact, the SEO stuff we have is essentially a course in and of itself. But as far as high ticket dropshipping goes, nobody even puts a scratch on what we teach. So this is the way I would come at it. If you were in our course, this is what I would say to you. And Rodrigo, you are in our course, so I can't say it to you, but to everybody else as well. I would start with technical SEO, certainly. So we have a module in our program, technical SEO, which is about improving Shopify themes past what they generally come with, so the way that your site operates from a technical perspective. So I would do that first, because there's like eight or nine things in there that you do. You just need to do them once and then they're done, right? So you want to knock those off. And that basically just gets the basics of your actual website, like your website code and some of that sort of stuff, how you load YouTube videos, if you're using videos, for example, and a whole range of little technical things that just put your site in a place that it's easier for a search engine to understand. It might be better from a page speed perspective. And so we want to get that done first, right? Because that's just the basics. Doing that allows pages that you actually put work into from an SEO perspective to rank easier and better. So we do that first. Next thing I would do is I would be doing the on-page SEO stuff for my product pages first. So making sure I've got all the on-page SEO boxes ticked for product pages. I'm not going to go through what all those boxes are because we don't have time for that. It'll take a while. But we have talked about it on our podcast, the Dropship podcast, before, if people are listening and want to learn more about that, who are not in our course yet. I would do that first. And the reason I would do product pages first is because for a high ticket dropshipping site, product pages make up the bulk of the pages on your site. And remembering that search engines do take into account the quality of your website as a whole, if you've got hundreds and hundreds of product pages which aren't really going to rank for anything organically other than the product title, and once again, that's all your product pages are really going to rank for. You're not ranking them for the big keywords, right? But the problem with product pages is not necessarily that they're not going to generate in an individually a lot of traffic organically. It's that if they're not in good shape, then they're going to make your overall site look shitter than it is, than it should, right? And that's going to hurt the performance of pages that you build specifically or improve specifically to rank for high volume search terms, right? If you've got like 500 low quality product pages and then 20 really good content pages, the really good content pages don't rank as well because the hundreds of crappy product pages are pulling them down, right? And making your overall site look much lower quality than you want it to. So you do the on-page SEO for your product pages first. Then after that, you're going to do your collection pages, on-page SEO for your collection pages. And once again, each of these areas is a whole module in our course. Collection pages for a high-ticket dropshipping business is really where you start to get some interesting stuff going on for SEO. They can rank for really good search terms if you do them right, both that produce sales, but also have decent volume behind them. And so that's where it gets really fun. So I'm going to do my on-page for collection pages. Then I'm going to start looking at what other content pages do I need, you know, whether that's blog posts or whatever. And all of this is going to be backed behind keyword research. So that's the thing. Like, do your technical SEO, then you do your keyword research, and then you do your product pages, then you do your collection pages, then you start building blog posts, blog pages to target keywords that you can't hit with a product page or a collection page. And there are definitely keywords that it's not appropriate to hit with those type of pages. So you're going to do blog posts, collection pages. Now, you know, at that point, once I've put in some decent work into all of those, then I'm going to worry about off-site SEO or off-page, which is generally we're talking about things like backlink building and stuff like that. So, you can do a little bit of backlink building before as you go, but a lot of the time you don't have anything for people to build backlinks to, right? I mean, people who you might get backlinks for, they're not generally going to backlink to a product page. Maybe a collection page, if it's a decent collection page, for sure. It's much easier to get backlinks to content pages. So, I probably the off-page stuff is going to be, like backlink building, which these days, honestly, means you need to have a budget for that because you're going to pay for most backlinks these days. Guest posting, etc. Yeah, I mean, I don't mind a little bit of that, but I wouldn't really focus on doing that. That's a pretty, low efficiency method of getting links. There's a few other little off-page strategies that you can use, but primarily we're talking about backlink building. So that's going to be one of the later bits of the SEO stuff that I would focus on. Once again, because, I mean, if you're putting a lot of effort into building backlinks to your site, but your site's rubbish from an SEO perspective, like your actual site is rubbish, like backlinks, they can temporarily overcome that, I guess, you know, if you get particularly hacky with it. But I mean, we don't teach hacky SEO. So like, yes, I'm sure that, you know, you get into the SEO space in the Twitter sphere and all of this, there's all sorts of crap you can do, right? But in the long run, almost none of it sticks, almost none of it works. And so we don't even bother talking about that. But that would be my approach to SEO. So thank you for that question. I'm going to jump over and I can see we've got a couple of live questions that have come in here. So thank you to those. So the names, got a few coming in from YouTube here. So I don't really know what these people's names are. So just excuse me because YouTube always comes up with weird things. First question was, hey, I was wondering what you think about making ads for a small store in inverted, in quotation marks, organically. I've been making blog posts in several communities and have traffic, just no orders yet. My site's only 3 days old. I'm not sure exactly what you mean. If you're talking about making organic posts, like ads, an ad isn't organic. Those are contradictory terms. So But making blog posts in several communities, I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, posting content in communities, if they're relevant, I mean, it depends what sort of business you're running and all that sort of thing. But, you know, certainly interacting in communities that are niche specific to your business, yeah, sure. I mean, that can be a good strategy. It's certainly a strategy I would utilize at some point with a high ticket dropshipping business for sure, if such communities exist. I mean, if they're just kind of generic communities that aren't really related to your business, then I wouldn't think it's a very good strategy. But yeah, putting your name out and interacting where your ideal customer is online is always a good thing to do. So yeah, I mean, that's fine. You'll have to experiment around with it a little bit to find what works, but yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. All right, next question, also from YouTube, and thank you for this question. Shopping ads aren't getting spend. Have 20 brands uploaded with shopping ads, barely getting a couple dollars of spend each day combined. Without more context, what do you think an issue is? Well, I would firstly say make sure you don't have any errors that would prevent your products from running in ads in Merchant Center. Assuming you don't have any errors in Merchant Center, increase your bids. Increase your bids. I mean, that's usually going to be it. I mean, you're right. It's hard to say without looking at the ad account itself, because there can be all sorts of reasons why various things happen. But generally speaking, if you don't have any actual issues that are preventing your ads from showing, and your ads aren't spending, and like they're alive, everything's live, your products are live, all that sort of stuff, it's going to be your bids. You need to increase your bids. And start increasing. So increase your bids by 30 or 40%, leave it for a few days, see what happens. Do your impressions go up? Do your clicks go up? The other piece of your question that's missing is like getting a couple of dollars of spend each day means you're not getting many clicks, but are you getting a lot of impressions, but just not many clicks? Because if you're getting a lot of impressions and not many clicks, it might be a search traffic targeting issue. Like as in you're showing for irrelevant search terms. If you're getting no impressions and no clicks, then it means you need to bid more. So thank you for that question. Another live one here from Nick. Thanks for the question, Nick. How would I find the original supplier for a product? If I see an item I like on a random website, how do I trace it back to the original supplier to contact them? Well, it'll depend. I mean, usually if there is an actual brand for the product, like a brand manufacturer, most websites are going to put that on there. Like they're going to have the brand on their website, because one of the good things about selling branded products is you get to do your marketing off the back of the brand's strength in the market. And so you usually utilize their brand name. But outside of that, I mean, you want to look and see, does the product have like a unique product name? I mean, if we're just talking about a generic product like a sofa or a lounge chair or something, like that can be hard, because often retailers sell their own product or they'll sell it under a fake brand that's not really a brand, it's really their brand. Like Wayfair does this. I mean, if you're in the US, you'll be familiar with Wayfair. One of the biggest high ticket dropshipper at one point in time, for sure. They do a lot less dropshipping than they used to, but they have a number of brands which look like different brands, but they're really just owned and run by Wayfair. And so Wayfair is the manufacturer essentially. You know, that can exist, but I would say, is there a product name? Just go onto Google and start searching for the product name. And you know, if it's sold on other websites, you'll probably find a website at some point where you find the manufacturer mentioned or the brand of the manufacturer mentioned. If you can't find that, and if it's a really generic product, well, I mean, you might have difficulty in doing that, but then that would probably also indicate that it's not a very good product for drop shipping anyway, for a high ticket drop shipping anyway. And that might be a bit of a red flag. Usually it's a bit of a red flag if you can't find a brand for a product or a manufacturer, or you only see it on one random e-commerce site and you don't see it anywhere else. If you only see it on one random e-commerce website and nowhere else, that product, it probably means that it's their product. You probably wouldn't be going after that one. So I hope that helps, Nick. All right, and jump back over to pre-submitted questions now. I got a question here from Marvin. Thanks for the question, Marvin, if you're watching or if you see the answer here. Do you recommend using sales funnels for higher ticket products, i.e. click funnels? With Google Ads, sometimes margins are too tight. Is it a good option to migrate partially to funnels? What has been your experience so far? I'm in the bikes niche. All right, so there's probably a few things to unpack with this. So there's a couple of connections here that in this question that just aren't like it's missing stuff, right? So the problem appears to be that's driving the question is that Google Ads, Marvin, might be struggling to find profitability with traffic that's or sales that are coming from traffic that's come from Google Ads, right? So the cost of the traffic is not supported by the margins. Now, that's definitely an issue to deal with, 100%. But I don't see how that relates to how you present your product to customers. So the use of a sales funnel, an e-commerce website is a sales funnel, but the use of a sales funnel like click funnels, which most people you would probably associate with a long-form sales page or something like that, you still have to send traffic to that. Like in and of itself, a sales funnel doesn't produce traffic. So how are you getting traffic to your long-form sales page? Well, you could actually use Google Ads for that. You could use, Facebook ads. You could use, social media ads. I can guarantee you none of those are cheaper than Google Ads. You're not going to get traffic more at a lower cost. You can build, like, once again, sales funnel. Yeah, you can do that on Shopify. You can build a landing page on Shopify if you want to. There's like a whole bunch of page builders for Shopify. So, I think I don't think it's necessary. Could it help to have a like? I just don't see like. What are you doing when you think like I use funnels not for e-commerce. I use them obviously I sell information products, for example. I have a course and I sell that using a funnel and funnels, not click funnels. I can't stand click funnels, frankly. They're low quality pages, such a hypocritical company. Not a fan there. But all a funnel, all you use these tools for is to build a longer form sales message, usually, right? Where you're doing direct response copywriting, pairing that up with some videos, some images, et cetera, to lead a customer from where they are through the persuasion mechanisms that you're going to utilize to get them to the point where they want to buy a product. Now, you can do that on any website platform, including Shopify. So, I don't get the connection between that and profitability on Google Ads. There are a lot of other things you could be doing to improve your profitability on Google Ads. You are using Google Ads traffic. To begin with, maybe your traffic's just not the right traffic, and you're sending too much of the wrong traffic from Google Ads to your website. That's probably more likely to be your issue. Competition is one of the biggest problems with profitability. How are you dealing with your competition? Now, should you have a page that customers land on that has more content on it or takes them through a sales approach? Yeah, sure. But why wouldn't you just do that on your e-commerce website? Like, why wouldn't you just do that on your product page on your e-commerce website? Like, why would you need? I just don't I just don't get the connection. I don't see the necessity to for a high ticket dropshipping business to go and build a funnel for a product. Not to mention, there's a lot of work building a good funnel. There's a lot of work in that. On a high ticket dropshipping business, you're going to have tons of products. Like, are you going to do that for every product? You're not just going to do it for one product, right? And so the time investment versus the reward, I don't think is there. Plus, you can't run shopping ads to a funnel page. You can't run Google Shopping traffic to a ClickFunnels page, for example, or not very easily. And so, yeah, I just don't see the point, honestly. I mean, I've been part of 8-figure-a-year high-ticket dropshipping businesses with no funnels. So, I mean, you know, if you can get to that point without them, I struggle to see why you would need them, why anyone would need them. So, but should you present, you know, look for ways that you could improve your product pages on your website with sales messages and all of that sort of thing, all of the things that you would put on a ClickFunnels page, you could put that on a Shopify page anyway. So yes, I mean, if you can think of that, you know, if you've got the chops to put it together, right? As in you're good at copywriting and all of that sort of thing, yeah, go for it. I don't see any reason not to. All right, back to some live questions here, and thank you for that one. All right, Murray asks a question from YouTube. I've been talking to suppliers, and a lot of the time they aren't good at replying to emails after we have started a conversation. So my question is, how do I make sure I get replies? Call them on the phone would be my recommendation. I mean, you know, there's nothing you can do to make somebody reply to an email. They either will or they won't. You know, so you just have to be persistent. Call them as much as you can. Like, every business has a phone number, even if they don't put it, even if it's not easy to find. Saving it, try and find a phone number. Do whatever you can to find a phone number. And just call them and keep calling them. Don't stop calling them. Like, at the end of the day, you don't have anything to lose. Until you get a definitive answer, you don't have anything to lose. A lot of people will be like, well, I don't want to annoy people and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, yeah, but you're building a business. Like, this is success or failure right here. Like, why would you be worried about what somebody else thinks when you're going to be faced with your own failure? Like, who gives a fuck what they think at the end of the day? Because if they're not saying yes, then it doesn't matter. Like, so what if you piss someone off? I don't think it matters. And you're not going to anyway, by the way. But just keep at it. Keep at it. But yeah, call as much as you can. That's always going to get a better response than email, because like, email is very impersonal. It's easy to ignore. It's easy to delete. And so, you know, there's no magic tricks to get somebody to answer your email. I think from my own experience, I get 50 emails a day I don't answer. I just automatically delete them. People reaching out to me, asking me for things. I just don't have time to even read them. And so I just delete them. It's a tough one, but like I say, as much as you can, I would call. Next question, also from YouTube, from Isaac. Let's say you are planning on going into a niche that you are not passionate or knowledgeable about. Do you typically just watch a bunch of videos, read articles to learn about these products/niche? Yeah, sure. I mean, I have never been in a niche that I'm knowledgeable or passionate about, to be honest. I think Ben and I probably have a few more recently that I'm maybe a little bit more interested in, but I wouldn't say I'm passionate about anything that I've sold from a high ticket dropshipping perspective in 10 years of consistently selling things in high ticket dropshipping businesses. And so, yeah, I mean, like, you're going to go through this process of this is something that it's really easy to overthink, right? And yes, it helps. It definitely helps to have knowledge, but you can build knowledge about anything, right? And you're going to go through this process of calling suppliers. You're going to upload all their products. You're going to look at their products a lot, like a lot. So just in the circumstance of putting their products on your site and looking at the product data, you're looking at product descriptions, you're putting them on website, but you're learning a lot right there, right? You come out of just doing that, knowing a lot more about the products. But yeah, I mean, I would probably suggest like immersing yourself in the product/niche a little bit. Yep. Read articles, watch videos on YouTube or wherever they exist. You know, oftentimes suppliers will have a bunch of materials about how their products are used and maintenance or looking after them or whatever it might be. You can certainly look through those things. you know, there might be niche communities out there, you know, like forums or, you know, places where, you know, your ideal customer hangs out online. You can go and see what, you can go and join those and see what people are talking about, see how people talk about the products, see how people talk about the things that they do with the products. But at the same time, like, don't expect that you're going to know it all in the beginning, and you don't need to. Like, most customer inquiries are not really technical in nature. They're not. A lot of them are just going to be about, like, shipping. Like, oh, I want to buy this product. How soon am I going to get it? Oh, I've seen this price over here. Can you do a better price? Like, literally, this is what a lot of your inquiries are about. And if you don't know something, like, you just call the supplier. Right. So customer calls up, hey, I've got this really curly question about this problem. You're like, oh shit, I don't know the answer to that. I just say to them, look, I've just got to go and just go and check on the answer for that for you. I'll call you back in 5 minutes if that's okay. Yep, no worries. Call them back in 5 minutes. In between then, you call up your supplier. You say, hey, it's you know, me from this business. I just had this question from a customer. I was a bit unsure. I just wanted to double check the answer. What's the answer? Supplier will help you. They want you to sell stuff, so they're going to help you answer these sort of questions. Then you get back to the customer, it's fine. And over time, you become more and more of an expert about your products, about what people do with your products. So this should definitely, I do see a lot of people who are like, oh, I'm just waiting until I find that thing that I'm passionate about before I start a business, or coming at it from the perspective of, oh, I need to start a business in pet products. Yeah, but pet products is a shit niche for high ticket drop shipping. But I have to do it in pet products. And it's like, okay, great. You're going to be unsuccessful. Like, don't feel that you need it. Like, you don't need it. I've never had it. I know so many people who have never had it, who are some of the best, have the best businesses in this space. And they don't have that. Like, it's not required. It's not necessary. You don't need it. Don't even think about it. Just get in and start doing, and it'll come together. All right. Next one is from Yalitza. Hello, Yalitza. Why is it advised to not seek credit terms with suppliers? What are the pros and cons? Seems it would be beneficial for someone who doesn't have a high credit card limit. Well, the reason it's not advised to seek credit terms in the beginning. So there is nothing inherently wrong with credit terms with the supplier. So what that means, for anybody who's not familiar with that, is like, you can get credit terms with the supplier, which means they supply you with the products and you don't pay for the products. So you have an account with them. You don't pay for the products for a specified period afterwards. It might be 14-day terms, it might be 7 days, it might be 30 days, it might be 60 days. And so you can order products basically on credit and pay for them later. So there's nothing wrong with that. I've had that, with suppliers from time to time. Some suppliers might prefer that you have that sometimes as well. It's not a good idea in the beginning though, because, particularly in the US, suppliers will perform a credit check on you if you ask for credit. And so if you're starting your first business, and part of that is they'll ask for trade references, as in references from people in their industry, that you're not going to fuck your credit, right? That you have experience with credit terms. And so the problem for a new high-ticket dropshipper is you're not going to have any trade references. And no, asking Ben and John for a trade reference is not going to constitute that. And so what are you going to say? Now, if you've got prior business experience and you've already been running businesses where you do have references for your ability to pay your bills, then sure, you could do this. But I mean, that's not 99.9% of people who start a high-ticket dropshipping business are not coming to it from that background. So you have no trade references. And so your chances of that, of getting that from the day zero with a supplier, are probably going to be low. Like, because the supplier has no assurance that you're going to pay your credit bills. And if you can't get a credit card, like, why is a supplier going to give you credit? And so what that's going to mean is, if that's the way you're going into it, then you're not going to get approvals with as many suppliers as you would if you were doing drop shipping and paying for things up front. So that's the first thing I would say why it's not advised in the beginning. Like, absolutely don't seek it in the beginning because you'll get knocked back, right? Down the track, once you've got a record with your business, you're profitable, you're making money, if you think for some reason it will be easier for you to switch over to credit terms with the supplier, sure, you could go and do that, right? And that's probably going to be okay. But the second reason why I actually don't like it is you have to be very good at predicting your cash flow to go on credit terms, right? And people, like they can with credit cards, can get really fucked up here, right? So let's say you've got 30-day terms with a supplier and halfway through the month, you've overspent in other areas in your business and you've spent that money. You haven't paid your supplier yet. Like, now you owe your supplier money that you don't have. And for a new business, once again, this can happen because your revenue is very unpredictable in the beginning. Your profitability is very unpredictable, which is completely normal, right? And so it can be hard to predict how you're going to pay what could be very big bills because we're talking about high ticket products, right? So your monthly bill for a high ticket dropshipping business, I mean, we have suppliers we're paying like $100,000 a month to, right? I mean, that's a big bill to be carrying every month. So to me, it actually, because you're not going to get better rates for credit terms, like it's not going to improve your margins or anything. So to me, I actually think it's safer to pay for orders as they ship because you can't get yourself into credit problems either. And you can't get yourself into a billing hole, which, yes, if you manage everything properly, you manage your money correctly, you shouldn't do with credit terms. But once again, a lot of people come to high ticket dropshipping with no experience of managing business budgets and doing all of that sort of thing. And so probably once again, you don't have an accounting department behind you that's managing all of this for you, or a financial team. It's you, right? And you've got to manage everything and make sure you're getting it all right. So I just don't know why you would increase the chances that you're going to get something wrong for no benefit in return. I don't think there's any benefit to having credit terms. Because, I mean, customer orders a product. You've got the payment within 1 to 2 days anyway from Shopify Payments or PayPal. I mean, PayPal these days, you can get an instant payout. And so, like, there's no harm in waiting a day or two. I mean, if you don't have money in the bank or you don't have a high credit card limit, well, just wait for the money to come in and then ship it out. That's what I'd do. I'd just avoid the hassle of credit stuff altogether. All right. I'm going to go back to the last pre-submitted question for this one. And then I'll come back to some more live questions there. Nick asked in a pre-submitted question, US resident looking in the US market, when getting started initially with expenses, is there a particular order of buying the Shopify site, the domain, the business credit card, LLC, Google, workspace, and any other initial costs? You don't buy the Shopify site. Shopify is a monthly subscription. You can get a $1 trial on it. It's, you know, $30 a month or whatever it is now for the basic level, which is all you need in the beginning. You kind of do all these things at the same time, to be honest. I mean, the costs are not higher. Domain's going to cost you like $10. Setting up Google Workspace, once again, it's a subscription, but it's going to cost about $12. You don't buy a credit card. I mean, once again, that's just applying for a credit card. You can do that anytime. So it's kind of like you need your LLC, you need your website, which to have your website, you need your domain name, your email, phone number, etc. You need all of that before you call suppliers. So the order doesn't matter, but you have to do it all before you call suppliers. So just do it in whatever order you want to. I mean, I do it all at the same time. Like the day I open my Shopify site, I go and get my domain name, I get my email set up, and I get my phone number. It's all kind of one thing. You can open an LLC by yourself. Like, I mean, once again, there's not much cost to any of these things, at least in my opinion. So I wouldn't overthink too much which order you do them in, but you have to do them all before you call suppliers. So, you know, just do them in whichever order you would like to do them. All right, back to live questions. This one is from Tristan. Since I'm just starting out, I don't really have good credentials to get a business credit card. How would I deal with a return if I don't have a credit card to cover the cost? I'm simply not sure how the whole return process would work on my end if it were to happen. Well, a credit card's not really going to help you with returns anyway, because you're not going to, well, I suppose maybe you could refund a customer from a credit card. I don't know. You probably can't. No. It would depend on the return, I guess. Can depend. Can be a case-by-case basis. Depends on the supplier and what their returns policy is. Depends on the product, et cetera, et cetera. So, you might be out of pocket with some of the costs. Depends what your returns policy says as well. Like, I mean, is the customer responsible for return shipping? Who's paying for the return shipping on the product? You need to take that into account. You can get, depending on the nature of the return, like if it's a return because the product's faulty or something, then the supplier is going to cover that cost, right? Because that's going to be like warranty, a warranty issue. So you're not going to be out of pocket for that. If you allow customers to return your product for change of mind reasons, the product's got to, you should specify that the product has to be in its as new packaging, et cetera, et cetera. Then there's a question of who covers the shipping cost, and your returns policy should specify that. It's a choice for you. You can cover it, or you can say that customers have to cover it in the circumstance of a change of mind return. Depending on what you specified there, will determine what the outcome is. And then for the cost of the actual product, because yes, that money's going to have to go back to the customer once the product is returned, and you don't pay the customer back the money until you've confirmed that the product is back in wherever it's got to go back to, and it's in the condition that it's supposed to be in, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, if those conditions aren't met, then you don't refund the customer. Now, what the supplier does, if the supplier allows you to return the products, are they giving you credit? What are they doing? And where is the money coming from to go back to the customer? Well, it's either going to come out of your pocket or not. I mean, there's multiple ways that can happen. But a credit card doesn't necessarily, that's not why we get a credit card to cover returns. Make some more sales. Use your profits to cover the cost of returns. All right, thanks for the question, Tristan. Next one from YouTube. Is there any business bank accounts that you recommend? No, it doesn't matter what business bank account you use. Depending on what country you're in, we have recommendations around credit cards that we recommend, because you get rewards and different cashback schemes from different credit cards and that sort of thing. But as far as bank accounts are concerned, no. We use Mercury at the moment, Mercury Bank, which we really like. So that's a good one. But, if you're drop shipping within your own country, you can just use any bank. I mean, here in Australia, I just use like the bank I use day to day. I use their business banking accounts. And that's fine. So don't overthink too much about bank accounts. All right. Murray, is there any particular software or setting that autofills business info on the bottom of emails? I don't know what you're talking about, Murray. Like what emails? You probably need to be a bit more specific that. Murray also asked, best Aussie credit cards for flights, in your opinion? No, Aussie credit cards are generally shit at all levels compared to our counterparts in the US. You don't get good points. You don't get good cash back. I use two that I use. If you can get them, one's not easy to get, Amex Platinum card, Platinum Business Card, Amex. That's a good one. I use Commonwealth Bank, have a good Business One, Business Gold, I think it is, or maybe they're Platinum as well. That's not a bad one. Another thing I use in Australia is pay.com.au, which is a payment processing platform where you can accrue points, which you can also convert to frequent flyer points if you use like Qantas Frequent Flyer or Virgin or whatever, you know, whatever the platform is. But yeah, I mean, I hate Australian frequent flyer things. Like, they're such a rort. Like what you get for what you spend is like so minimal. You have to spend a real large amount of money to generate a lot of points in Australia. But pay.com.au essentially allows you to pay for things like bills with a credit card, and they give you points, and then you still get your credit card points. So like, you can get 3 points per dollar. You can't use it in exactly the same way, but you can use it for a whole bunch of stuff. You can convert them to frequent flyer miles, et cetera, et cetera. And so there's no credit card that gives you 3 points per dollar in Australia. You can get that with pay.com.au as well as a credit card. I like to use the Commonwealth one. The one that I think about, which is probably a bit more relevant for me, is will your credit card let you accrue points for payments to the tax office? That's one that you should check, because when you're running your own business full time, you're paying your own tax, right? You don't have an employer who's paying your tax for you. If you can pay your tax bills to the ATO with a credit card, including your BAS and all of that sort of thing, like your sales tax, not all credit cards will let you accrue points for payments to government agencies. And so you need to get a credit card that does, because you're going to pay money to the ATO. So, you know, I mean, I pay over $100,000 a year to the ATO, you know, I get points for that, which you need the right credit card to do it. So that's a good little tip for Australia. Keep that in mind. But yeah, I mean, those two that I mentioned, I would recommend outside of that. You just got to shop around and see what's the best. All right. We got just a couple of minutes left, I don't know that I'll get to everybody. I'm chucking a little one at the end here. Marini asks on YouTube, thoughts on Temu's rise as a threat to the dropshipping business? Couldn't give a flying fuck about Temu. I'm staggered that anybody buys shit from Temu. Like, it's just all fucking trash. But that's only got anything to do with low ticket dropshipping. So, Marini, you shouldn't be doing low ticket dropshipping anyway, because it's nonsense. So I don't care. Temu, it's just another AliExpress. It's just another junk platform full of junk. Has no bearing on high ticket dropshipping whatsoever. So couldn't care less is the answer to that one. But thank you for your question. Another YouTube low ticket dropshipping question. Would you know any wholesale laundry detergent suppliers? Nope. I could not imagine why you would want to drop ship laundry detergent, frankly. Just like, if you want to sell it, go and buy it on bulk. Sell it from your own warehouse. Fernando asks, I get that there needs to be a certain number of competitors for a niche to be deemed good to drop ship, but wouldn't most niches be too competitive eventually, with many getting into the high ticket space? Good question, Fernando. Competition is is something that you do need to think about. It is an important point when you're doing niche research. You don't want to go into something that's too competitive. But no, like I get kind of where the logic might come from, thinking, well, if everybody, more and more people year on year keep going into high ticket dropshipping, won't it all just get too competitive eventually? And if that were true, like, there would be no niches for any business that weren't competitive. Like, it's not a static thing. It's not like a gradually increasing, like in any niche, like five people join 1 year, five people start the next year, five people start the next year. After 3 years, there's 15 competitors, and then another five, 20, and it just keeps, that's not how markets work. People come into niches, people go out of niches. Like, most people quit businesses. Like, the reason most people fail at business isn't because there was a problem with the business. They quit. They're not right for business. Most people can't run a business. And so, no, actually, I don't think that's the case. I mean, I've been doing this for 10 years. And I see people starting in niches that I knew about 10 years ago. And they're making millions of dollars inside of 12 months in revenue. Like, no. So, no. I think the e-commerce market itself is growing as well. So more and more people are buying more and more things online, which means markets are getting bigger. They're not getting smaller. They're getting bigger. And so I don't think many are getting into the high ticket space either. Like, honestly, there's a lot of people that talk about it, and there's a lot of people that dick around the edges with it. Like, you know, I mean, we've had, you know, millions of people listen to our podcast, the dropship podcast. Are all of those people getting into high ticket dropshipping? No, a fraction of them are. So there are thousands of niches out there right now, which are not too competitive. And once again, I think that sort of thinking is just like, go and look at the evidence. I mean, do the research, and you'll see that that's the case. There are some niches definitely that are too competitive, for sure. There are some, but nowhere near the majority of what you could do out there at the moment. And one day, will that change down the track somewhere? Yeah, maybe. Who knows? But like I say, high ticket dropshipping, it's not a new thing. People have been doing high ticket dropshipping for more than 20 years. I know people who have been doing it for more than 20 years. I've been doing it for 10 years. I get that every now and then there's some new little pimply faced guru out there on Twitter or TikTok that pops up, and they're like, oh, I've invented this new way of dropshipping. It's like high ticket sales. And they're like pretending that they invented it or that they discovered it yesterday or something like this, or 2 months ago. And holy shit, now they're driving around in a Lamborghini. Like, those people are all fake bullshitters. Like, honestly, I'd love to name names, but I can't be bothered dealing with what comes from doing that. Like, there's tons of opportunity. There always has been. There still is, and there's going to be for a long time. So rather than worrying about that stuff, just get stuck into it. You'll find a niche. It'll be fine. Get started. You know, don't just be another dreamer. And on that note, I'm going to wrap up because we're out of time for today. Thank you for the questions. If I didn't get to anybody's question, thanks for asking. I'll find a way to answer it somewhere else for you. And of course, if you're ready to join Dropship Breakthrough, just go to dropshipbreakthrough.com/300. There's a deal hovering around there that I'm going to take down sooner or later. I just haven't got around to it yet. You can still grab it. Thanks for your time, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening to the Dropship Podcast. You can find all the show notes for this episode at dropshippodcast.com. And if you're ready to take the next step in your dropshipping journey, we invite you to join us inside Dropship Breakthrough, where John and I will walk you through step-by-step in starting your own high-ticket dropshipping e-commerce business. But that's not all. Dropship Breakthrough will also teach you everything you'll need to know to grow your business and take it to the next level. So head over to dropshipbreakthrough.com and sign up for our free training that will help you take the first steps towards building and growing your own profitable high-ticket dropshipping business. John and I both love business, think about it all the time, can't turn it off, and don't know why anyone would want to. And because of that, we started a second podcast where we can talk about everything we've ever wanted to talk about in business. Not just dropshipping. We like talking about all things business. So if you want to hear John and I talk about all sorts of stuff, from camel meat dropshipping businesses to PDF dropshipping to a guy gambling $100 every single day on YouTube Shorts to how OnlyFans taught us lessons in business, we're all over the place over there, but it's a really fun podcast. So if you're a podcast listener, you love John and I, head over to your podcast player of choice and look for The Low Bar Podcast. You'll see a blue image, and you'll see a cartoon version of John and myself. And go back and start at episode one. I promise you will not regret this. This is one of the more fun projects that I have done recently. I know John's having fun too, so we'd love it if you joined us. Check out The Low Bar Podcast on YouTube or wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts.